Now back on downtown, taking a little trip to the 70s. One of the great TV themes of one of the great shows of all time, The Rockford Files with James Garner. We're talking a little 70s as we're joined on the telephone this afternoon by our friend, a journalist, author of the book A Futile and Stupid Gesture, producer of the documentary on the making of Orson Welles' final film, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, Josh Karp with us. Well, good afternoon, Josh. How are you?
Good, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Good to have you on with us. How have things been going as we wrap up the year?
Things have been going great, though, as I'm watching the snow begin to fall outside my window, so I don't know how great it's going to be in like 5 hours. But.
Yeah, you guys are getting hammered out there. Meantime, for us, it's supposed to be rainy and about 54 degrees tomorrow.
Yeah, we're supposed to get like possibly 2 feet, so that's life.
Yikes.
We'll have a white Christmas.
Well, there you go. There you go. And the new year's coming, and I don't know how much you can talk about this, but I know you got a lot of projects in the works, and I'm poised to say that 2023 is going to be the year of the carp, which I think is a dish I had in an Asian restaurant once.
Having the last name Karp is always inspires a lot of at least you didn't say anything about bottom feeders.
That's right, right.
You guys are bottom feeders. I'm like, okay.
I'm glad you gave me the chance to return to my middle school emotional roots.
hopefully this will be the year of the carp. I've got two animated projects and two possible documentary projects in the works. I'm excited for 2023.
Now, can you share any details about those?
Sure. I'm working with, I think I mentioned this before, but I'm working with Ricky Cobb.
Yeah, Super 70 Sports. I love it.
Yes, we're working on an animated project with Jimmy Kimmel's production company that is basically about kind of an Elon Musk type character, which is good because we are at peak Musk,
yes,
I would say.
Yes, definitely.
Right now, we have achieved peak Musk. An Elon Musk type character who sends a bunch of D-list celebrities to an alternate universe that is all based in 70s pop culture. And so it's like, you know, if you would, if you're committing a crime, if somebody commits a crime, you're going to run into Kojak and Columbo. You might wander into an after-school special, you know, if you go by the high school and wind up having to write the Miss Lonely Hearts column for the school paper, like something like that. So anyway, it's about these people trapped in an alternate universe, that is based all on 70s pop culture.
That sounds, I'm going to say that just sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's been really fun. It's been really fun to work on, and we're going to be pitching it right after the first of the year.
It's fantastic. Well, you know, if you, need any voice actors, you might know somebody. I'm just saying.
I think I know somebody. Absolutely. And you're reasonably priced, I heard.
Yeah, free. Free. Is that a good price? I just want the work.
All right. You're in.
Fantastic. And what else? What are some of the other projects you can tell us about?
Yeah, we're also working with a Canadian production company on an animated series about kind of a player towards the end of his career in the World Hockey Association, which was the rival to the NHL, which was like a real fly-by-night, kind of completely, you know, insane league, which is where, you know, like the Hartford Whalers came from, and I think the Edmonton Oilers were part of the that league. And it's about a guy at the end of his career in the NHL who winds up in Los Angeles playing for a team owned by a guy who's the Urinal King of Los Angeles. And who's a little bit like kind of like a really small version of Charlie Fitz. Big promoter, you know. So that's another one that I'm working on. And then possibly a documentary about Bob Rafelson, I know we may be discussing today.
Yeah.
And then one other documentary that I cannot talk about now, but I think is going to come through early in the year. So
well, that all sounds great. Well, That is absolutely wonderful. Well, yeah, I thought today to keep in the holiday spirit that we would talk about the depressing number of people that we lost who were right. 70s icons here in 2022. Well, and since you mentioned him, let's start with Bob Rafelson, who I think was the gateway to our connection. When I read the wonderful piece you did with him a number of years ago, I said, I've got to talk to this guy.
Yeah, that was real. That was an unforgettable experience. Bob was probably the last kind of, you know, it's funny because he gets credit for, you know, being one of the people who created New Hollywood, you know, the kind of after the, you know, the fall of the studios. Yet he, you know, his persona was really, he's like the last of the old school Hollywood directors, you know, who lived like the kind of life, you know. I always, when I was working on the, you know, Orson Welles book, the thing about Orson and John Huston was that, you know, anybody who met them for 5 minutes, it was the most important, one of the most exciting experiences of their lives, and they'd never forget it. And then Orson and John Huston would move on and not know that person ever again. You know, because it was just like they were so big, you know, that everywhere they went, everybody who met them was like, oh, my God, I met John Huston. Bob was that kind of guy. Bob was just absolutely larger than life and had more insane adventures. You know, like you don't read about David Fincher and Hunter Thompson shooting pictures of Richard Nixon, you know, at a gun range. But you get that with Bob. I mean, Bob. Yeah, all you need to know is his two best friends are Jack Nicholson and Hunter Thompson. So,
well, there you go, yeah, right there.
He was great. I mean, he and a lovely guy too. I mean, I you know, had, really was lucky to get to do this article about him before, you know, the end of his life. He kept telling me that we started working on it in, I think, 2018, and he kept saying, you know, I don't know how long I'll be around, and I honestly thought the guy would never die because he was just like. He had been through so much, and he was still just this kind of big, you know, burly, you know, tough guy. So I was really sad to see that he passed away.
Yeah, and one of the things I think that he wanted to accomplish in that piece was to let people know that he was still alive, unless they were people that he might owe money to.
it was such a funny story to work on because he had, and I don't know what it was about me. I mean, it may have probably been the Orson Welles book, but he turned down a bunch of people who had wanted to write about him. And then I got the assignment, and he accepted me, but he did it very, in very unique fashion. He just started forwarding me emails before we even agreed to talk. And one of them, which went into the story, was an article from Sight and Sound magazine. It was about New Hollywood. In the introduction, the guy who wrote the article said, you know, well, you know, Steven Spielberg and, you know, Francis Ford Coppola are still active at the top of their game. So-and-so, you know, is still working. You know, Paul Schrader, they said, you know, and then Bob Rafelson, Dennis Hopper, you know, and Robert Altman and a few others are gone. And Bob wrote a letter back to the guy saying, you know, I'm alive, believe it or not. But actually, don't tell anybody that I don't print a retraction because I owe some people money. And the subterfuge is working for me here. I can just tell them, you know, that I'm dead based on the article. But yeah, Bob was like one of those just uncrushable spirits. You know, he was the biggest personality in every room. You know, gruff but extremely charming, and really, he and I became close. He wanted to kill me a couple times while we were writing the article because it took a long time. But he and I really became very close, and I, you know, I was really, you know, his him dying really, you know, was, you know, like one of those chapters in your life that closes that you kind of, even though he was in his late 80s, you kind of still think you're going to, you know, talk to these people again. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, another one that you certainly dealt with and worked with and knew a lot about was Peter Bogdanovich, who had such an interesting career. as a director, but as a film historian, an actor, and just a guy in the middle of so much of that scene in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, Peter was an extraordinary guy. I mean, he really, he lived, it's an interesting counterpoint to Bob, you know, like, you know, Peter wasn't going around and getting in fights with people and doing, you know, some of the stuff that Bob did, getting arrested and all those things. But, like, Peter really had the Hollywood experience in a way that I don't think people get to have that anymore. I mean, he rapidly rose to the top. You know, here was this guy who was a writer for Esquire, who got hired to write a Roger Corman movie, and then, you know, parlayed that into making his own Roger Corman movie, and then, you know, went on one of the all-time great runs of critical and box office success with Last Picture Show, What's Up, Doc, and Paper Moon, which were just incredible films on every level that got, you know, all kinds of acclaim. And he, you know, and then he experienced a precipitous drop in his status. He was on top, and then he, you know, had three films in a row that did not work. Daisy Miller, and I can't remember, Nickelodeon, and then there was Everybody Said, no, it's not Everybody, there's another one too. It was a musical he shot in black and white with Burt Reynolds and Sybil Shepherd.
So. Right, right.
But yeah, so, and, you know, Peter, you know, he had all that, you know, experience of, you know, going bankrupt, trying to keep up with the Hollywood lifestyle, and there, you know, his, not to dwell on his bankruptcy case, but his bankruptcy case, they said, you know, that he was still looking for work as a director at the time. And they said, you know, if you're a director, you have to act like a big director. So you have to spend, you know, $70,000 a year on clothing, and you have to, you know, do all this. He was like a true Hollywood story, you know? I mean, there was some real truth in that, you know? And they said, spending all this money is like riding a tiger. You know, if you get off the tiger, you get eaten. So you got to stay on the tiger. And that's what Peter kind of did. And he, you know, went up and down and in and out in his career. But really a wonderful, wonderful director, and a really, he's interesting. He was a guy who maintained, like, almost like a level of innocence about Hollywood, you know, maintained a love for it despite all the difficulty it had caused in his life.
We had a chance to talk with him. My gosh, he was, even in that one interview we did, he was so fascinating and so funny and had so many great stories. I think I asked him what he learned from Roger Corman, and he said, stealing shots, how to get out there when you're not supposed to be out on the freeway and get those shots without getting any permits or anything like that.
Nobody knew more about movies. I think it's safe to say literally no one knew more about movies than Peter. I mean, you could talk about any director who ever lived, and Peter could tell you everything, you know, that was worth knowing about that guy or that woman. He's just an really brilliant guy with just such a love of film. You know, and at that point, you know, you could still be somebody who had a love of film going back to Buster Keaton. You know, so he knew all about that. You know, and he lived in an incredible life. I mean, when he was a magazine writer, he really got to go out to California for Esquire and meet all of his idols. You know, he used it as, he'd say, I think I'll write about Cary Grant for you guys. So he got to go spend time with Cary Grant, you know, and then he spent a lot of time with Jerry Lewis. You know, he really, got to live, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, he got to live his dream. And that is something that not a lot of people get to do in this life.
No, and I think his last project was that Keaton documentary that was absolutely wonderful.
Right. Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah. No, he did a great job with that. And he was where he was trying to, you know, he was still working right up till the end. He had a real, the wrong word, but stick-to-itiveness about him. You know, I mean, he was, nothing stopped him. He just kept going and going. And, you know, he made he made a movie a couple years before he passed away, and I think he was working on something else, you know, around the time he passed away. So
we're talking with Josh Karp here on Downtown. I want to talk about a couple of other folks who have passed away this year. One of them very recently, and a multi-talented guy who was a part of, I know it was one of my shows, and I think it was one of your favorite shows from the 70s as well, The Rockford Files, and Stuart Margolin was such a perfect foil for James Garner.
Oh, that is, honestly, the character of Angel on Rockford, I think, is the best recurring, you know, non-regular character in the history of television, which I may be wrong because I haven't seen everything ever on television, but he was just so indelible, you know, and just did such a great job creating that character. I mean, that was an episode of Rockford that had Angel on it was like, Rockford was great to begin with, but anytime Angel showed up, you know, you were just like, oh, this is going to be great. Yeah, he was somebody, you know, he's one of those people who everything he was in was better because of him. You know, he always made an impression, you know, he always was unique. And he was just, you know, completely always played indelible characters. And I think he was probably on like 80 million Love American Styles.
And also, if people didn't follow closely, they may not have known he was a very successful director.
Right. Yeah, TV, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what he directed on TV. What were some of the things, you know?
He directed several episodes, I think, of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Trying to think what else, but he did a bunch of TV series. I think up until, you know, maybe the last 5 or 10 years.
He was a super talented guy, and for whatever reason, I think he was. I know that he was a native of Davenport, Iowa. Don't ask me how. Yeah. Or
oh,
why.
I didn't. He directed, won a Directors Guild Award for an episode of Northern Exposure.
Oh, what a great show!
Also directed Love Boat, Magnum PI, Brett Maverick, Quantum Leap, Wonder Woman. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. No, he was amazing. I mean, you were just any time he showed up in something, I was always, you know, I was staying on that show, whatever it was. But he was fantastic, just so funny in such a unique way. You know, there's like nobody else like the character of Angel.
Another guy who passed away this year, and again, people didn't see him on screen, but they saw his work at so many shows. David Davis, who was a terrific writer, wrote for Mary Tyler Moore Show, was one of the co-creators of the Bob Newhart Show, wrote Rhoda, wrote for Taxi, and I didn't realize this, was married at the time of his death, had been married for a number of years to Julie Kavner.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never even heard of him. That's why I'm going to look him up after we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a career. My God.
But on the big screen.
All the big shows, yeah.
When you talk about guys from the 70s who were just iconic members of that decade, and he did successful work in the 80s and 90s and the 2000s as well, but to me, the quintessential 70s actor was James Caan.
Yes. Yeah, that was definitely his decade. I mean, it's hard to compete with what he did. I mean, he, you know, not just the Godfather movies, but I mean, it would just be enough if he had made Rollerball.
Well, yeah. And for me, as whatever I was at the time, 11, 12 years old, not prone to getting weepy at TV shows. And then there he is as Brian Piccolo. Oh. And I'm bawling my eyes out watching, what was it, Brian's Song?
Yeah, I had my first fist fight as a result of Brian's Song. I was at summer camp in northern Minnesota, and they showed Brian's Song. So this must have been 75 or 70. No, it was even that later. It's probably 78. And some kid in a Minnesota Vikings T-shirt laughed when Brian Piccolo died.
Oh.
And I'm not a big fighter. I confronted him afterwards, and we wound up having a really pathetic, you know, 11-year-old kid fight. But no, that movie is like that. You know, movies like that, and Remember the Titans, you could barely keep from crying the whole movie. You know,
Absolutely. Well, it's great to remember some of these giants that passed this year, and we move on to 2023, and I look forward to all the exciting things that you're going to be doing. Now, you got the big storm coming. Were you planning, do you do any travel for the holidays at all, and is that now grounded?
No, all our family's here, so we're both the oldest, so we're kind of, you know, on deck to host all the Christmas stuff at our house. So we are staying home, but hopefully we'll be able to get, you know, from one place to another and, you know, get food and all those things.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, hunker down. Hope you survive the storm in good condition.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful holiday and a very happy new year. And we look forward to having you back on as soon as those projects come to fruition in 23.
I would love that. Happy holidays to you as well, Rich.